Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Eerie House Radio. I'm Dale K from Spook Show and Eerie House Radio, I guess. Here along with
Dave Binkley from Weirdest Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. And we got a new movie we filmed coming up soon, Dale. I've already got three segments of them already edited down. Yay!
And we're and of course, Dave is referring to the Weirdest Really Bad Movie show. Yes, we are here with, Gar would have joined us, but I guess he finally got his cable company so ticked off they cut his phone line. And they're jamming his cable. And they're jamming his cell phone.
That's the only thing I can think that would keep him away tonight. Because I talked to him yesterday. He says, yeah, the cable company's coming out to work on my lines tomorrow. That's exactly what he told me.
Explain a lot.
How's that?
Of course, we always have to worry about his health because Gar's had a few, you know, moments when he couldn't work, and that's fine. Well, I don't know if you'd call this work. We're not getting paid. what the hell? So we better just face facts, huh, Dave?
Yes. Well, we need to face something. As long as we don't have to face our face. Oh, wait. That's what we're doing tonight.
Yep. Oh, man, and I keep wishing we had, like, you know, some kind of music rights and stuff like that. I'm thinking of all these songs we could be playing today. Or Eyes Without a Face by Billy Idol. That's a cool song.
Yeah.
Also a cool movie, Eyes Without a Face. A creepy. I think it's foreign. I'm not sure. But it's a classic horror from the 60s, Eyes Without a Face. Look that one up. Very interesting. I believe it's Fern.
I'll do that.
It's a Fern film, but I think there's a version with that's been dubbed. Dubbed. I dubbed the good movie.
Good
Eyes Without a Face. It's a doctor who I think tries to do a face transplant for his daughter who was in an accident.
Yeah. Well, watch the face plant there, Dale.
A face transplant. A facial transplant. She got a facial, all right. And that's exactly what she said. No, there's some pretty hideous moments, I guess, in it. Yeah, especially for the 60s, which wasn't real big on horror, in my opinion, other than maybe Hammer. Hammer was cranking them out.
Yep.
Face to face, Pete. Fog's on the face. Listed. There you go. Look at these guys throwing out these great tunes. Thanks, Fog's Bane.
And then his girl Bob saying, Gar can't face it.
No, he couldn't face being here. He's got a reputation
to
keep.
He does.
That's right. Ain't slumming around with us guys.
Yeah. We didn't say it was a good reputation.
Yeah, no, but he has one at least.
He does. Yes.
Dave, you have a very good reputation. Obviously, if you're working with the people you've gotten to work with and for the length of time you've worked with them. And you're tireless. You're like the James Brown of hosting. Ow! Ow!
Yeah, actually, if I can get the location, I already got turned down on one. But next month's movie, Robin Sabota is going to be my co-host. To those who aren't from Northeast Ohio, you don't really know, but she is was a big TV personality and still does a few things on Cleveland Television. So,
a prominent newscaster here, Robin. Good old Robin Sabota.
Yep. It must have working with me, she's either has a heck of a sense of humor or she lost a bet. You know, I'm not sure which one.
I was bored. Thank God you're here. No. A very nice, very nice lady.
Oh, she is.
Yep.
And boy, does she have stories to tell. She is in, she's our ship doctor on Spaceship One. And boy, she can just steal the show just by telling some of the stories. like the time she was on Hollywood Square, you know, so that kind of a thing. But
Hollywood Square, cool. Just one square?
Well, she only got one square.
Oh, okay, she only got one square.
It's a whole lot smaller than you think, the big box. They look really big, but they're very small.
Well, if you think about it, they're seated, so if somebody tall stands up, like John Wayne, they'll bang their head on the square above them.
Yeah, probably put their head through it.
I'd pay to see it. See that. Not so much the Duke, but somebody who had it coming.
Yeah. So anyway, we have programs about faces. You know what's funny is I just thought about, it's called Men Without Mouths. Oh, CBS Radio Mystery Theater. So now I got to look for some mouth stories, you know, to build in around that. Men Without Mouths, yep.
Men Without Mouths?
Which is kind of, mouths, right, and M-O-U-T-H-S, which is kind of a gangster thing. If somebody, like, turns stooly, they could end up, with a disfiguration, shall we say.
Detungulated.
So that could be part of it, yep.
Or sew your lips shut.
Something like that, absolutely.
Yeah,
or as the goat would say.
Yeah, we're not going to get any more descriptive than that. There you go.
No.
We got too much good radio to get into. We don't want to get shut down
by
the powers that be. No siree, Bob.
That's right.
We know that Blog Talk is hanging on to everything we do. That's why they're making our lives hell. We got the Whistler, the Shadow,
and the
Fat Man.
And the Fat Man. Let's hang on for the Fat Man for the second show anyway, because Gar came up with an actual date for it. We over the phone, we talked it out. We really did kind of figure out when it was a good date, but Gar had it in his mind. So maybe I'll in between, I can look that up too. So we'll just see where that is and to go from there. So we can start with either other show. I know we enjoy Whistlers because they do have kind of those surprise endings as well. And The Shadow, which is kind of funny we have both of those, Dale, because when The Shadow started on radio, that's really what The Whistler became, because he was basically just an announcer, an observer. He wasn't part of the story. He was just an announcer. And here we have both The Shadow, who became the central focus of the story, but then the Whistler, who followed him and became what the Shadow was. So it's kind of a cool pairing
More of a host. The Shadow started off as a host.
Yes.
Yeah, and subsequently our host tonight, the Whistler, bringing us a good story called The Judas Face. Why, Judas Face you. Sounds like a good insult.
The Whistler lasted a good long time too, Dale. This was episode 210. Yeah, the seasons ran longer than on television. But now with streaming shows, most of them are anywhere between 5 and 10 episodes, where, you know, you would have maybe 8 weeks off, something like that, in the summer for a series. But this was episode number 210 out of the series. And it comes to us from June 3rd of 1946.
The Signal Oil Program, The Whistler. That whistle is your signal for the Signal Oil Program, The Whistler.
I am the Whistler, and I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
Yes, friends, it's time for The Whistler. Rated by independent research, the most popular West Coast radio program. And remember, let every traffic signal remind you, with new Signal gasoline, you do go farther than ever. Look for the familiar big yellow and black circle sign that identifies those popular signal service stations throughout the West, from Canada to Mexico. And now The Whistler's strange story, The Judas Face.
The movie star lay on the hospital bed, looking up at the white ceiling through narrow slits in the efficient mask of gauze and tape which covered her face. A million-dollar face, the trade papers had called it, with sparkling blue eyes, a delicate nose, and passionate full lips. Yes, in every sense of the word, the face of Sandra Dane was her fortune. Then, in 10 seconds, everything had changed. There was an afternoon horseback ride with Janet Blaisdell, her stand-in, a gust of wind, Janet's silk scarf on the horse's eyes, a terrified plunge, a fall, flying hooves all around her in blackness. Then the hospital smell. Quiet, efficient Dr. Rogers and his quiet, efficient staff. Janet and Gordon West, her producer, visiting her every afternoon. All of them kind and sympathetic. All of them knowing that the million-dollar face might be gone forever. That behind the mask of bandages was a question mark.
Well, don't sit there staring at me, Gordon, darling. The end of the world hasn't come, you know.
Oh, of course not, Sandy.
I hope not. Janet, dear, it wasn't your fault. The wind blew your scarf and...
That's what I keep telling her, Sandra. But you know how she is.
If you must feel sorry for someone, dear, how about poor Gordy? He's got $1 million tied up in the picture, and he can't shoot a lick until I get out of hock. Well, that's right, isn't it? Sandy, dear, we've been wanting to
please,
tell you...
Janet.
But what's going on?
Sandy, about the picture...
What about the picture?
You know how bankers are.
Bankers?
This accident of yours... I know you'll be all right, but so far as they're concerned, well...
What are you trying to tell me, Gordy?
You've got to understand, Sandy. The bankers insisted that Gordy test someone else for the part.
Of course, I thought of Janet first.
Janet? You're playing my part?
She didn't want to do it, Sandy. Neither did I, but there just wasn't anything else we could do about it.
Janet, playing my part.
Please don't feel badly about it, Sandy.
Feel badly? I think it's marvelous. It's so funny. My stand-in. It just doesn't happen. Oh, it's a wonderful break for you, dear. Wonderful.
Well, what did I tell you, Janet? I knew she'd understand. And you don't have to worry, Sandy. No matter how this plastic surgery turns out, there'll always be a job for you at my studio. You know that.
A job? But the operation's been successful. I'm sure of it. They told me there was no question.
Of course. You've been wonderful, darling. Now we've got to run along. Oh, hello, Dr. Rogers.
Hello, everyone. Mind if I see the patient alone for a few minutes?
You're just leaving, Doctor. Chin up, Sandy.
Goodbye, dear, and good luck. We'll be seeing you.
You certainly have nice friends.
Yes, aren't they, Doctor?
Do you mean that?
Why not?
I happen to know, Miss Dane, that you believe Janet Blaisdell was responsible for your accident. That in a fit of jealousy over your career, she purposely whipped a scarf into the eyes of your horse.
Well, how can you say a thing like that?
I didn't say it first, Miss Dane. You did.
What do you mean?
While you were under the anesthetic. That happens frequently, you know. I'm bringing this up for good reason, Miss Dane. In the event this operation doesn't come up to expectations, a thought like this playing on your mind can ruin your entire life.
I hired you as a plastic surgeon, Dr. Rogers, and not as a psychiatrist.
I'm sorry, Miss Dane. I simply felt that now, of all times, was the moment to bring it up.
Why?
I'm going to remove your bandages.
When?
Now. Steady now. You must remember that we've done the very best we could.
Please hurry, Doctor.
Just a second more. I can guarantee that the reconstruction will give you a normal appearance, but...
But what?
Whether or not you'll be able to resume your career, I don't know. Now, there you are.
A mirror. Give me a mirror.
Very well. Here.
That's not my face. It's not me.
I tried to tell you, Miss...
Get out of here. Get out.
But Miss Dane...
Get out.
Very well.
$1 million face.
Judas Face. The Signal Oil Company brings you another strange tale by The Whistler. If you're like me, friends, your mouth waters each time you see one of those sleek new 1946 cars. Unfortunately, it'll probably be a long time before we'll all be driving one. But there's a way we can all enjoy a sweeter running motor right now. Yep, it's with that great new Signal Premium Motor Oil containing 5 scientific compounds that actually keep motors 6 times cleaner and reduce cylinder wear 1/3. You see, those compounds start to work on your motor the moment you switch to Signal Premium. Compound number 1 actually cleanses out old carbon, varnish, and sludge that's clogging your motor, while compound 2 keeps new carbon and varnish from forming. Compound 3 improves oil circulation to vital engine parts, while compound 4 keeps oil from thinning out when your motor's hot. And compound 5, that protects costly bearings from corrosion. The result? Man, you can feel it. You can hear it. And you'll enjoy it. A sweeter running motor with Signal Premium. So why not stop by your Signal service station and make your next oil change a change for the better? You'll find oil does make a difference in the way your motor runs. A big difference when you switch to Signal Premium motor oil. And now, back to the Whistler.
So the $1 million face is a thing of the past, Sandra. And Janet Blaisdell, your pretty stand-in, is going to take your place. In your picture. It was too much to take, wasn't it, Sandra? Janet in your place. Earnest, eager little Janet. The same girl who stood under the hot studio lights for endless minutes while cameras were focused and mic booms adjusted. The girl who took it for you while you sat in the cool shadows and watched. Yes, Sandra, it's more than you can swallow. But you're not raging anymore. There's only cool, calm hatred now, and a plan to kill. So you go about it methodically. First, of course, there's the matter of the assistant producer's job Gordon West promised you.
Oh, you've been so wonderful, Gordy. It's all set then about the job?
Sure, Sandy. You're going to be my assistant on Janet's first picture. How's that?
It's perfect. Just perfect.
Step 1, Sandra, the job. So you go to work for Gordon West. And in a week or so, you decide to tackle step 2. It seems that Janet's picture is a Western and will be shot on location. There are 2 possible sites, Hamilton Ranch or Felipe Mesa. And Gordon hasn't decided yet. Frank Reynolds, the chief cameraman, will have a lot to say about that. Gordon depends on him.
I don't know, Sandy. Last time I talked to the boss, he was all for Hamilton Ranch.
But there's no comparison, Frank. I was brought up near there. I know it like a book. Please talk to him, Frank. I know he'll listen to you.
Why?
Why what?
Why are you so interested?
Because it'll make the difference between a first-class Western and a cheap
one. You want Janet's debut to be a topper, huh?
Why, of course. Why not?
I'm a cameraman, Sandy. I've been trained to catch human emotion on film. Look for people's thoughts and their eyes and their faces.
Well?
Nothing. Matter of fact, I was on my way to the boss to make a pitch for Felipe Mesa, too. I kind of wonder if you and I have the same reason.
It has to be Felipe Mesa, doesn't it, Sandra? You weren't bragging. You know it like a book. Its steep sides, the narrow, dangerous trail winding up the cliff to the top that they'll be bound to use for the chase sequence, with Janet plunging down it at a full gallop, the wall falling away sheer on her right for 300 feet. Yes, Sandra, Felipe Mesa is perfect. It has everything you need. 2 hours later, Frank comes out of Gordon's office.
Frank.
Yeah?
What did he decide?
You win, honey. Felipe Mesa.
So you're over the first hurdle, Sandra. And for the next 2 weeks, as the company prepares to leave for location, you think it through again and again, coolly taking your time, anticipating, preparing, concentrating on the climax that will come when Janet reins her horse at the top of the mesa, pauses a moment, and then starts down the trail.
Sandy? Janet. What's the matter, dear? Did I scare you? No. No, Janet, I was just thinking. I'm sorry. You look so funny smiling to yourself that way. I just dropped by to tell you we're leaving tomorrow. Start shooting Monday. Isn't it wonderful? Of course, dear. I'm so thrilled for you. And I'm so thankful to you, Sandy. All the help you've given me. You've been so good about everything. Why, don't be silly, darling. We've got to make good, you know. You and I.
Yes, Sandra. You've got to make good. And everything is pointing in the right direction. You relax now and wait, smiling to yourself over Janet's enthusiasm on the trip to location during the preliminary shooting, controlling the anger inside you as Gordon West raves over her performance. It's still going to be your picture, isn't it, Sandra? Then at last the moment arrives, the day when the chase sequence is to be shot from the rim of the mesa. The weather has been blistering hot for the past week, and the company is restless as Gordon gives them last-minute instructions.
Now listen, everyone. I want to shoot this chase without a break in the action. Get it all in one unbroken sequence. Get that, Frank?
Okay, Gordy. Cameras are all set.
Now, you men who are the heavies, remember, when you're chasing Janet down that trail, don't crowd her. Look as though you're laying on the leather, but don't get too close. I don't want any accidents. Janet.
Right here, Gordy.
You're sure you've got the action all straight?
Of course. I stop for a minute at the top and then take the trail down the south face.
Come here a minute.
Yes, Gordy?
This is the last chance, honey. What about the double?
No.
Why?
Well, Sandy would never have used the double. Neither will I.
Well, she never did a trick like this. How do you know she wouldn't?
I know her pretty well. Oh, please, let's not go through it again.
Okay. By the way, where's Sandy? Oh,
over there, sitting down. I'm afraid the heat's got her.
Oh. All right, you'd better get up there. What's the matter, Sandy?
Oh, I'm just a little dizzy, I guess. Afraid I'm not going to be much good to you today.
You're pretty hot at that. Maybe you'd better go back to the camp, huh?
I was hoping you'd suggest that.
Maybe I'd better send someone back there with you. Be alone, you know. Not a soul in the camp.
Oh, forget it. I'll be all right. Just lie down for a while.
Okay.
Oh, and, Gordy.
Yeah?
Wish Janet a lot of luck for me. Will you?
Sure.
All right, kids. Let's go.
They've gone now, Sandra. Gordon's on top of the mesa to direct the action by phone. The cameramen and actors are in their places, and you're supposed to be alone in camp with a sick headache. You know the mesa, don't you, Sandra? No one sees you as you slip along the chaparral-covered slope at the foot of the mesa, up through the underbrush to the spot you found the first day of shooting, right next to the trail halfway to the top. A perfect spot, isn't it? A huge boulder on one side, greasewood and mesquite on the other. You crouch beside a strong steel stake you've driven firmly into the earth the night before. Pick up the ends of a thin wire rope looped around the mesquite root on the other side of the trail. invisible under the dust you scattered over it. You're ready now, waiting, listening. And then, she's coming, Sandra. You tighten the rope. Hitch it firmly around the steel stake. You're ready for her now.
One of the things I like about the Whistler, Dave, is yep. he narrates as if he's talking to the, usually it's the perpetrator, the person who's doing yeah. wrong.
Yeah. And what's interesting, they did a series of movies, I think like five Whistler movies, and they were okay, but the television series, which maybe it was just syndicated, they used Bill Foreman, who is the Whistler, the narrator in this, and they used mm-hmm. him. And it was very much like the radio series, where the movies were really more about the movie telling the story itself instead of the Whistler doing so.
Yeah, and just, I like how he's addressing the, almost as if he's trying to be the voice of their conscience.
It could be, because he's telling you what they're thinking and how they're thinking it. So, yeah.
Ooh.
Wait. I got that.
There you go. Ooh. Right on cue, David.
There we are.
Get a lot of that Neary House. Oh, with Fogs being a good old Bob joining us in the chat, we're wondering on the welfare of our compadre Gar the Ghoul.
Yep. And curse you, Cox Cable. We'll go with that.
Yep.
But an interesting story we have. The face, the body, everything is so important to her, unless you play hideous parts in general. You know, the face is one of the most important aspects of the camera zooming in, you know?
Mm-hmm. Especially when it zooms in and you hear that sound.
Oh, that's that sound that goes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Ooh. Just imagine that in your mind as you're listening to Erie House. Radio.
Yep. Yes. What you don't want to hear is
whatever.
No, nope, you don't want to hear that. No.
Nope. Yeah. No. Especially at home.
Yeah. Well.
Whatever.
Yeah. I pulled that out once in a while. Whatever. You know. It wasn't a whatever. It was like a whatever. You know.
Yep.
All I know is. We know, Dale, our mates are going straight to heaven because they've put up with us.
Oh, gosh. That's like a free pass. You're in.
It is
what?
A free pass. Yep.
You're married to Kay? Oh, my God. Dale Kay? Forget it. Everybody clear the line. This lady goes first.
Get out of her way. Get out of her way.
That's right. Front of the line. Frontline service. There you go.
But interesting story, yeah. This is I guess we may find out. It's sounding like a tale of revenge for stealing her part, even though she didn't steal it.
Not exactly. A good old story, as I mentioned in the chat, for the benefit of listeners. I remember those good old days before I was born.
Ah, yes.
Even I don't know what that means. So let's continue with the Judas face from The Whistler. Comes into my head. Yeah.
So it was your picture after all, wasn't it, Sandra? The weeks of planning paid off. The moment the horse tripped, flip of the cable loosened it from the mesquite root and it lost forever, along with a steel stake among the boulders at the bottom of the gorge. You're back in camp, lying down, of course, with your sick headache when Gordon arrives with the news.
Sid! Sid! Oh, no, Gordy, no!
Take it easy, Sandy.
Oh, you're wrong, Gordy. She can't be dead. She's just a kid. Oh, Janet, no!
Yes, Sandra, that was an Academy Award performance. Even though you don't have the face to go with it anymore. It's all settled now. There was no question, just a few formalities, and an official statement by the coroner that Janet Blaisdell died as the result of an accidental fall from a horse. The weeks pass, and you go back to your job at Gordon's side in Hollywood. Yes, it's settled. You did a perfect job. There's no evidence. And yet there's still a vague, uneasy feeling inside you, as if something was hanging over your head, ready to fall. Somehow you can't put your finger on it. At least until the day Frank Reynolds, the cameraman, takes you to lunch.
You know, Sandy, I think I told you once about the peculiar insight a guy gets after grinding a camera for 10 years.
What do you mean, Frank?
Well, it's funny. You can almost tell what a person's thinking. Just the way he holds his face. You know, I can spot hatred a mile away, for instance. Jealousy. The cold look of a...
Of what, Frank?
Of a murderer. Funny, isn't it?
It's interesting.
They can't hide it, you know. It's there in spite of them. It's odd. I thought I saw it in your face out on location that day. The day Janet died.
Yes, sir, that is odd. It indicates that you're not infallible anyway.
It's not there now, though.
Of course it isn't. Now, suppose...
Just a minute, Sandy. It isn't there now. There's something else.
What?
Fear. I want you to come over to my house tonight, Sandy.
No, I'm sorry, Frank.
I won't take no for an answer, Sandy. Be there at 8. There's something I want you to see.
You make an excuse. Tell them you're ill. Leave the office that afternoon. He's bluffing you, Sandra. You tell yourself again and again that Frank Reynolds is bluffing you. That there's no reason in the world for you to go to his house at 8 tonight. And a 1,000 good reasons why you shouldn't. There's no proof, no evidence. Why should you fall for it? Of course not. So at 7 o'clock, you decide definitely you're not going. And at 8 o'clock sharp, you're ringing his doorbell.
Hello, Sandy.
Hello, Frank.
Well, are you coming in?
I can only stay for a minute.
I won't be long. I began to think you weren't coming.
I came here for only one reason, Frank. To get to the bottom of that double talk at lunch today.
That's exactly why we're going downstairs. I've got a movie projector there. You know, rally the folks around for a private showing once in a while. Now, sit right down over there, Sandy. Screen's all set up.
Please, Frank, let's stop this nonsense. I told you I can only stay a few minutes. And... What's that revolver doing on your desk?
Revolver? Oh, that. I was cleaning it before dinner. Nice thing to have around. No telling what dangerous characters a man might meet in my business. But you're not a dangerous character, are you, Sandy? So I'll put it away for now. Let's look at the pictures, huh? I'm sure you're going to find them interesting, Sandra. You see, I took them myself the day of the chase sequence at Felipe Mesa.
Oh, the chase sequence.
That's right. The chase sequence. You remember that day, of course. The day Janet was the day Janet died. I'll turn out the lights here. Now start up the projector. There we are. I don't think you knew I was on a roving assignment that day, Sandra. I was using a portable camera with a telephoto lens. Managed to get some very unusual shots. Oh, here's a pan start of the chase.
Your
brain Take a look
is
at the mesa
spinning
there.
Like that projection machine.
Well shot of Janet.
You know what's coming next, don't you, Sandra? Frank is gloating now over his telephoto lens. The one Heavy thing you forgot to figure on. Slowly you ease out of your chair in the dark toward the desk, pull the drawer open, grope for the revolver, find it. Move quietly back to your chair, hiding the gun under your purse on your lap.
Of course, Sandy. Every climax has to have a build-up. Telephoto lens is a wonderful thing, isn't it, Sandy? You'd swear you were 10 feet from her. Oh, now we're getting somewhere. Here comes Janet down the steep pitch. Oh, look ahead of her. In that narrow gap on her left, in the greasewood there. Surprise, huh? That woman there, crouching next to the trail. Look what she has in her hand. A rope, isn't it? Now, here's a cutback to Janet galloping down the trail. She's almost opposite the woman now. Look. Look at the girl with the rope. Who does she look like, Sandy, huh? Who is it?
Stop it! Stop that machine!
Okay.
Turn on the lights, Frank. Hurry up.
Right. There. Is that better?
All right, Frank. How much do you want for that film?
Why, Sandy, what are you...
I said how much, Frank.
Well, I didn't know you admired my camera work so much, Sandy.
Will you come to the point?
Well, of course, you've got to admit this is pretty unusual stuff. It comes high.
How much?
Well, I figure you've probably stashed away a couple of $100,000 in your time. Successful star, you know. $40,000 a picture.
$200,000?
Yeah. Suppose we say half of it, and you get the negatives.
What made you do this, Frank?
Well, I always was a guy for a fast buck. And there was something else, of course. Janet and I were going to be married when the picture was finished. Let's face it, Sandy, $100,000 is cheap.
Yes, I guess you're right. I can't afford to take a chance. There's only one way to make sure.
Hey, what are you doing?
Stay just right there, Frank. Right where you're standing.
Put down that gun, Sandy. You can't get away with murder again.
No.
Listen, Sandy. I'll destroy the film. I'll...
The Whistler will return in just a moment with the strange ending of tonight's story. Meantime, I have good news tonight for you Whistler fans who've been asking, will the Whistler follow the example of so many of the popular shows and go off the air for the summer? The answer, I'm happy to say, is no. In appreciation of your loyalty that has made the Whistler the West Coast's most popular radio show, Signal Oil Company and the thousands of friendly dealer-owned signal stations throughout the West who sponsor the Whistler will continue to broadcast this program without interruption throughout the summer. So for your Monday night radio entertainment, we of the cast hope you'll continue to make the Whistler a regular stop on your dial. And during the week, we also hope you'll stop by your Signal dealers and get acquainted with that great new Signal Premium Motor Oil, the new type lubricant containing 5 scientific compounds that actually keep motors 6 times cleaner, reduce cylinder wear 1/3. It's today's finest recipe for a sweeter running motor. Signal Premium Motor Oil. And now, back to the Whistler.
It was the only way out, wasn't it, Sandra? It was all there on the film, everything. Absolute ironclad proof. And you were smart enough to realize you could never end it by paying him off. The black, blinding hatred for him closed in as you gripped the gun tight and pulled the trigger once, then twice more, and then...
Sandy, you poor, stupid little...
Frank! I shot you, Frank. Why don't you...
They're all gone now, honey. You better let me have the gun.
Get away from me, Frank!
Give me that gun. That's it. You're a cold-blooded killer, aren't you, Sandy? But you're at the end of your rope now.
What is it? I don't understand.
The gun was loaded with blanks, darling. All right, gentlemen, you can come in now. Looks like the scene's over.
All right, Frank. Come on, Dr. Rogers. Officer?
Gordon, what are you...
The required number of witnesses, Sandy. Are you satisfied, officer?
I don't think there'll be any question.
I might as well tell you, Sandy. We faked that film.
What? You mean there was no...
There was nothing. except a healthy suspicion on the part of Dr. Rogers that you murdered Janet Blaisdell. Seems you talked rather freely while you were under the anesthetic some time ago. He insisted we examine the point on the Mesa Trail where Janet fell. All we could find was a hole on the left-hand side of the trail, as if a stake had been driven there. So we made a long guess and shot the scene with a stock actress made up to look like you, just to see what you'd have to say. Isn't that right, Doctor?
Yes, of course. There was nothing to go on except what you said under anesthesia while I was working on your face. Interesting, isn't it, Sandra? The one thing in the world you treasured most, the thing you killed for, gave you away. Your million-dollar face.
Monday at 9 o'clock, the Whistler will bring you another strange tale. The Whistler is broadcast for your entertainment by the marketers of Signal gasoline and motor oil and fine quality automotive accessories and by your neighborhood Signal dealer. Featured in tonight's cast were Mary Lansing and Gerald Moore. This program produced by George W. Allen, based on a story by B. Marsh, music by Wilbur Hatch, is transmitted to our troops overseas by the Armed Forces Radio Service. That whistle is your signal for the Signal Oil program, The Whistler. This is Marvin Miller speaking, reminding you to look for those familiar yellow and black circle signs that identify those popular Signal Oil stations in seven western states from Canada to Mexico. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Did you bring a note? You are tardy again. Did you bring a note? This is going on your permanent record, young man.
Oh, gosh, yes. The bed I flew in on was late. What can I say?
Remember that in grade school? Your permanent record.
And it's been following me all my life. I got to tell you.
Yeah.
It lasts about as long as a permanent wave, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. So, I came in. I don't know what else I've missed, but I do have a moral for the Whistler.
Okay.
Well, then, we should probably get right to that. You're just in time for it.
Barely. Yeah.
House Radio just barely presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
If you talk under anesthesia, how does dental surgery work? Okay, that's one. Roll it again. We got more.
Oh. What are we, catching up for lost time? Sure, why not? His mother.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so he was late writing many morals. Gar's Moral of the Story from Erie House Radio. And Gar the Bull. Good luck.
Funny thing about a stand-in, you have to be able to stand up. It's a requirement. Roll it again. One more.
Oh, my goodness. It's like a plethora of morals.
It's a plethora, yeah?
Yes. Plethora is more than two. Erie House Radio.
Yes.
Proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
Yeah, If you're number two, be alert that number one isn't trying to kill number two to stay number one, especially if number one becomes number two.
There goes number two.
And you know, Gar, I had to spend time because I wasn't sure you were going to make it. I had to spend time making a garless moral of the story. So, Dan,
oh, okay, go ahead.
In.
There you go.
Oh, good heavens.
Run it, Dan.
You're wearing out my button pressing finger. Erie House Radio proudly presents a garless moral of the story with Gar somewhere nearby.
Anyone can make a face, but only a plastic surgeon can charge for it. There you go.
Another jumper.
Another plastic surgeon job.
Another jumper.
Surgery job. Right there.
Do you guys recall on Saturday morning there was a television program with called the Far Out Space Nuts with
yes.
Oh gosh, what? Gilligan.
I remember it existed, but I never watched it.
They used that line you used there. They said that I'm wearing out my button pressing finger on that thing. That was a very bizarre memory for me.
Oh, now we know where Dale got it from.
Either that or it was on Ren and Stimpy 2. I don't know.
I never watched it.
Yeah, there you go. So,
the bizarre
nuts
from space.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
So would that be telekinetic intellectual property? Is that what we're talking about?
Or through osmosis. Yeah, he learned it through osmosis.
Yeah, osmosis.
It went through
it
the television waves and into his body. Yeah.
I picked it up in my sleep somehow.
I know Bob Denver was one of the guys, and I can't remember the other.
Put it back.
The other guy. Put it back. Put it away. I'll space it in nuts. Space nuts.
With Bob Denver.
With Bob Denver and...
Not John Denver, Bob Denver.
Bob Denver. Did I say, what did I say? What did I say?
No, I just wanted to be clear that it wasn't Bob Denver. That it's not John Denver. It is Bob Denver.
John Denver, yeah. It was Bob Denver and Chuck McCann. And Pat Maloney as Honk, the weird space animal. That's a woman? Oh, that was a woman in that suit. I had no idea.
Patty Maloney.
Patty Maloney. Nowadays, no difference.
Patty.
Well, yeah, but you couldn't tell with that suit. There were nothing gave it away.
No bumps?
Yeah.
No bumps
in the wrong places, the right places. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I don't
bumps,
know.
Bumps,
hey.
Bumps are oases,
Before we get into our next show, I just wanted to mention that announcer on The Whistler. Not the host, but the announcer, Marvin Miller, did a ton of things, including he was the voice of Robbie the Robot on Forbidden Planet.
Really?
Yep.
That's amazing.
That was Marvin Miller. The Marvin Miller.
Well, now that I know he voiced Robbie, he is the Marvin Miller.
Wow. On weekends, Marvin Miller did the voiceover for who? Ernest Borgnine.
Oh, okay.
I was wondering what happened to him.
The
I thought Ernest went on vacation.
I can see the resemblance.
I thought Ernest went on vacation. We haven't heard from him in a while.
Well, he had to go off to Maui to grow a tail. There you go. Now I've pulled all the things back. Okay, there you go. Ernest Borgnine. What else is left?
Just like that, you caught up for lost time. That'll make up for you.
Yeah, that was my note. That was.
I'm docking your pay stub.
I didn't even know if I was going to flat foot it in. I was like, oh boy, what's going on?
That means you owe us twice as much as you usually owe us.
That's right.
I gave you three times as much.
And worth every penny.
And worth that's right. Oh, my head. Oh. Okay, so catch me up. We've done the Whistler. Did you guys also do the Fat Man in the Shadow yet or not?
No.
I saved that
in case you made it. I did have to go through the calendar to figure it out, but I don't have to now. I can rip my paper up and throw it away because you're here.
Yeah.
Yes.
You only missed part of one show.
Okay. Yep. Dave and I knocked heads earlier this week.
Yeah.
Because I went down a rabbit hole and I needed Dave to help me out.
Yeah, he went down a rabbit hole and found a weasel.
Mm-hmm. It was a defanged weasel. I'm okay. Yeah. It was defanged. I'm all right.
And you know what's funny? This is an Australian version of the Fat Man. And what's weird about this, because the Fat Man was on ABC Radio for 4.5 years, and yet there's only like a dozen of these shows that survive, even though ABC transcribed all their shows. They were transcribed. Yeah. They were on transcription discs. Yet there's only at best a dozen American Fat Man, but there were only 52 of the Australian shows, and 36 of those have survived.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy.
I agree.
Well, Fogsbane has 11. I was guessing at a dozen, so you probably have them all, Fogs. You probably have them all.
Okay, there we go.
Known so far. Who knows what somebody will uncover someday.
Yeah. One.
But it's kind of like film, too, though. The longer the time goes, the more chance it's going to decay if it exists.
Yeah.
And what I found odd about the Aussie versions or Australian versions are some weeks I extrapolated the data that I had. Some weeks they either had, and I don't know, they either had different voice actors come in and redo the same script, or they replayed the same episode the next week.
At a different speed.
and it was backwards. Because is it Australia? I think it's Australia. Is Australia oh my gosh, what's that called? I can't remember. I should know as an ex-plumber. The toilet's flush backwards. There's actually a name for that, that the drains go counterclockwise and clockwise or something.
In junior high, we call it a reverse swirly.
Yeah. I don't know why as a plumber you needed to know, but they taught us the word and I forgot what it is. Anyway.
I didn't call it anything. I was busy trying to hold my breath.
Underwater? Or just hold your breath in period?
Dale would have been maybe a swirly. I was a swirler. I was a swirly.
Oh, I get it. Someone did that to you? That's awful. You knew that. Yeah, but his immune system is number one. If the toilets flush in an opposite direction, do their records run in an opposite direction? They would have to make all new record players where you would start at the middle and go out. I don't know. How would that work?
I would say not, because that's motor driven, where a whirlpool is more the forces of nature.
Old transcription discs did go from the inside out, very much like the CDs do. CDs play from the inside to the out. I'm sorry. They go outside to in. You're right. They go outside to in. Outside to in.
Now my head is spinning. You made my head hurt.
All I did was ask a question.
Anyway, it takes some time.
And Dale... That's all it takes.
Anyway,
with
all this talk, perhaps we should get to the Fat Man.
Murderer shows an unfamiliar face is our title.
Ooh. The Aussie version actually has a few episodes that some other folks don't have. That's weird. Anyway, we have an original broadcast date of September 16th, 1954.
Well, they say.
There he goes into that drugstore. He's stepping on the scales.
Weight 239 pounds. Fortune, danger.
Who is it? The Fat Man. And now, here's the Fat Man in Murder Shows an Unfamiliar Face.
This one began on the state highway just about 10 miles out of town. I was coming home late one night from a boat club banquet. When being alone, I had the old Ponte up to about 50. It was plenty dark that night. As I came around a curve, my headlights picked out a woman standing right in the middle of the road. She was waving her arms, trying to flag somebody down. So I slowed up and pulled over to the side of the pavement. Right away, I could see that she was kind of cute. Waving at me, sister?
Yes. Well, yes, I was. Thanks so much for stopping.
What's the trouble?
Nothing. I just wondered if I could hitch a ride.
Sure, get in. Which way are you headed?
Your way, back to town.
Fine. What happened? Your boyfriend leave you stranded?
No, I didn't have a date.
I thought maybe you were walking home from a buggy ride.
Oh, no, it wasn't anything like that.
What was it?
Nothing. I just missed the last bus back to town.
Pretty late for a girl like you to be out, isn't it? Especially on a dark road.
Yes, I know. That's why I was so glad when you came along.
How did you know it was going to be me? It's a risky business riding with strangers.
Well, I haven't any choice. I couldn't stay there all night.
Well, don't worry, kid. You're safe with me. I'm a professional chaperone.
What?
A private detective.
Oh, for a hotel?
No, for Brad Runyon.
Brad Runyon?
Yeah, that's me.
Oh.
What are you doing out here so late at night, baby?
Oh, well, I... Look, are you really a private detective, Mr. Runyon?
Sure, why?
Because, well, you might be able to help me find him.
Who?
My father.
Where's he gone?
I don't know what... Oh, that's it. I don't know.
Hey, wait a minute with that. There's a law against crying in this car.
But I was so mean to him.
Okay, you were mean. What did you do?
I just never went anywhere with him and never let him meet any of my friends. Not even the boy I was going to marry.
Why not? What's the matter with the old guy?
He's sick. Mentally, I mean. His mind sort of wanders off and he can't remember things.
So you don't want him to queer your romance, huh?
That's right.
Has he ever walked out on you before?
Well, just once when my mother died. And he lost his head and disappeared for 2 days. Well, that's why I'm out here tonight. I thought he might have been... He might have been in a grave.
Was he?
No.
Well, dry your tears, kid. I'll call up somebody at the Bureau of Missing Persons first thing tomorrow morning. They'll help you find him.
Oh, won't you?
Look, honey, I'm a pro. I've got to take cases that pay off.
Well, I'll pay.
Not my kind of dough. I need plenty to feed this starving carcass. Don't you see how thin I am?
I'll give you anything you want.
No, kid. Nothing doing.
Paul?
Hello, Kathy.
Yeah?
This is Brad Runyon. Remember me?
Who?
Brad Runyon, the Fat Man.
Oh, for heaven's sake, where have you been all my life? I thought you were going to call me up sometime.
I'm calling you now.
Well, this is a fine time, you big stiff. Don't you know it's 2:00 in the morning?
Yeah.
All right. Tell me what's about.
I want you to do me a turn, beautiful.
Uh-uh.
I did one for you once, remember?
But I'm in bed.
That's all right. I'm coming over with a sweet little girl.
What?
Her name's Dorothy, and I want you to look after her for a little while. She's kind of upset.
What's the matter?
Her father's missing, Kathy. Been missing for almost 2 weeks.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, so am I. That's why I'm taking the case. Will you let me drop her off at your place?
Surely. Bring her over.
Thanks, honey.
Do you think you can find her, Father?
Well, I'm going to try. I've got a hunch I might find her tonight. Only I've got to get over there right away.
Where? Where are you going?
To the morgue.
Look, Len, I know it isn't exactly cricket to ask you a lot of questions.
Okay, get to the point.
Well, I'm looking for a man about 60 years old, gray hair, blue eyes, and not a mark of identification on him.
Uh-huh.
You got anybody like that?
Have you any idea when he might have been brought in?
I'm not sure he was brought in, but it might have been any time in the last 2 weeks.
Gray hair, blue eyes, about 60.
That's it.
Oh, wait a minute. You say he had no mark of identification on him. Nothing in his clothes?
Not a thing. He wasn't even wearing a ring.
I know the man you mean. He fell or jumped off the viaduct over Kearney Street.
I don't know what he did. Is he here? That's what I'm asking you.
Well, he was here, but he's not here anymore.
What do you mean?
The body was claimed.
By whom? His wife's dead and his daughter's the only living relative.
Well, wait a minute. I'll look it up in the file.
Hurry it up, will you?
Oh, take it easy, Runyon. For a lousy cigar, you want an awful lot of service.
Come on.
Okay, here's the guy you're looking for. The body was brought in Friday night and claimed yesterday morning.
By whom?
A Mrs. Robert Hubbard, 610 Thornton Street.
Mrs. Robert Hubbard, who's she?
I don't know, but according to the statement she made, she was his wife.
Yes?
Good morning, Mrs. Hubbard.
Yes?
Don't be alarmed, Mrs. Hubbard. I really shouldn't have called this early in the morning, but I did want to speak to you. Are you having breakfast?
Why, no. What did you want to speak to me about?
Your husband.
Oh.
May I come in?
Yes, come in.
Thank you.
Were you a business acquaintance of Mr. Hubbard?
No, my name is Runyon. I'm a private investigator.
What?
Oh, it's nothing to get excited about. I just wanted to ask you a few questions about
you. What seems to be the trouble, Alice?
Oh, it's nothing, Gordon.
What do you mean it's nothing? Who is this man?
A private investigator.
Investigator? What do you want?
He wants to ask a few questions about Robert.
Well, this is a fine time to come here. Young man, do you realize it's only 2 days?
Oh, Gordon, please.
Let him go on, Mrs. Hubbard.
Confound it. Haven't you detectives any sense of decency? This poor woman has just lost her husband. And for 2 days now, you people have been cross-examining her like a common criminal.
Gordon, for heaven's sake.
I don't care. I'm fed up with this nonsense. And I'm not going to put up with it any longer.
Oh, now. That sort of attitude never got anywhere. You really must excuse my brother-in-law, Mr. Runyon. He suffered a great loss, too. You see, Mr. Hubbard was his only brother.
Well, in this case, I think he's right. I'll come back some other time, Mrs. Hubbard.
Oh, no, you stay. I want you to.
But...
No, I want to know what questions you were going to ask me.
Oh, just the usual things. How long were you and your husband married, Mrs. Hubbard?
26 years.
And you lived together all the time?
Oh, yes. We were very much in love.
He'd never been married before, had he?
No, of course not.
Well, just one more question, then. When you claimed his body yesterday, Mrs. Hubbard, you had it taken to a funeral parlor.
Yes? Why?
I thought I might stop in and see it, if you don't mind.
Why?
Well, I just want to find out how much he resembles a man I'm looking for.
I'm afraid that's impossible.
Impossible? For me to see the body?
Yes. Mr. Hubbard was cremated last night.
Yeah, I'm still hanging on, Mac. Have you got any information for me?
Yeah, some. Hubbard was an accountant for a firm that went on the rocks about 6 months ago. But back in 1936, he worked for a bank, so he must have been bonded.
That means there's a record of his fingerprints.
Right.
Can you get it, Mac? Can you get those fingerprints and match them with the ones down at the morgue? I've got to find out if that body they claimed was really Robert Hubbard.
Okay. I'll find out and call you back.
Not at the office, Mac. I'll be over at Kathy's place.
Kathy? Wow, you old son of a gun. Is that business or pleasure?
Business, Mac. my business. Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
Am I in time for breakfast, or have you had it?
Had it.
Just my luck. I came over here on an empty stomach.
Oh, is that the way it looks when it's empty?
Hey, hey, no cracks.
Oh, sorry, I couldn't resist it. I'll get you some toast, Brad.
Good. And while you're at it, throw a couple of eggs on it.
Okay, this way to the kitchen.
Thanks. Where's the kid?
Dorothy?
Yeah.
Oh, she'll be back in a minute. She just went down to the corner with a fiancé.
Fiancé?
Yeah, she called him up this morning, and he came right over. He said he had something important to tell her.
So you let her walk out with him?
Shouldn't I?
How do I know? I told you to keep an eye on her, didn't I?
Yeah.
But nothing. I want that kid to stay put till I work this thing out.
Well, don't yell at me, sweetheart.
I'm not yelling. I'm just a little steamed up about this case. And if I don't hang on to that girl, I won't have anything.
Oh, don't worry about... There she is now.
I'll get it. Dorothy?
Yes?
Oh, I forgot you had company.
Oh, this is my fiancé, Mr. Runyon. Carl Weldon.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Any news about my father?
Not yet, kid, unless you have some.
Well, we do have a kind of clue. At least Carl does.
Yeah?
Tell him about it, Carl.
Yeah, tell me.
Well, it's all kind of strange, Mr. Runyon. I've never met Dorothy's father, so I can't really be sure, but... Well, it must have been him, or he wouldn't have spoken the way he did.
Who? What are you talking about?
Well, this man. He stopped me on the street and said he was Dorothy's father. Seems sort of vague about things, but he knew we were engaged, and he wanted to wish me luck.
Go on.
Well, that's all there is to it. I spoke to him for a minute, and then he was gone, disappeared into the crowd.
When was all this?
Yesterday, about 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yesterday?
What's the matter, Brad? Anything wrong?
I'll say there is. If that man was Dorothy's father, I've had the wrong slant on this case from the very beginning.
What do you mean?
It's too hard to explain. I just took it for granted that somebody was trying to fool me.
Who?
A woman by the name of Hubbard. I thought she might have had something to do with your father's disappearance. But I'm all wet. The body she claimed at the morgue really was her husband.
Morgue? Oh, Mr. Runyon, don't you think my father's alive?
I do now, kid. It was just a mistake on my part. If I hadn't been looking at the case from our side, I never would have made it. I'll get that caddy. It may be for me. Hello?
Hello, Brad. This is McKenzie.
Yeah, Mac, I know.
Now what?
About the fingerprints. They match, don't they?
No, they don't. You were right about that body at the morgue. It wasn't Mr. Hubbard's.
Fat man's got himself into a bit of a pickle.
But he'll probably eat the pickle.
Yes. Yes, he should.
Dave, did you know that if you search for the fat man on archive.org, Dave shows up as Weird News Bad Movie?
Oh, stop.
That's
that.
That's crazy. No, for Batman? Right, there he is.
For
the
Batman?
Fat man, Weird News Bad Movie. Yeah. Really bad movie Batman. At Rocket Man?
I never showed Batman. I wonder how I got there.
It looks like it. I could be wrong. No, it's you. What's wrong? Oh, these are the wrong glasses. I've been using the wrong glasses.
Wait, that's Dale.
It's not getting better. No, that's you, Dave. You're in a car talking to a guy in a security vest or something. And it says, Weirdness Bad Movie.
Oh, Fat Man. The Fat Man. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, the movie. Yes. The movie.
We did host the 1951 William Castle movie, The Fat Man, the only Fat Man movie,
yes.
Starring the American radio star of it, J. Scott Smart. Yes.
Well, what's great is that you go look for the Fat Man. There's Dave right there. There's Dave. So that was cool.
Yeah.
Folks,
All I have to do to find a fat man is look in a mirror.
Oh, stop it.
Look in a mirror. Well, yeah. I think I suffer from that condition as well. So there we go.
Got a lot of radio.
Got a lot of radio. Is Jake and the Fat Man based on this Fat Man character?
No, believe it or not, I do have the entire 2-season run of Jake and the Fat Man.
Yep. Yeah. Here's part two.
On DVD.
Here's part two.
Murder shows an unfamiliar face.
A fat lot of good that'll do us.
Yep. Okay, here we go.
Why did you leave her in my apartment, Brad?
Because that's the safest place for her.
You think she's in danger?
Could be. In a case as screwy as this, almost anything can happen.
It's my apartment. That's not a safe place.
Why not? Only three of us know she's there. You, me, and the boyfriend.
Oh, and you trust all of us?
I trust you and me. I'll find out about the boyfriend in a few minutes.
How?
By waiting here in my car. Get in.
Well, what's this going to prove?
Nothing, I hope. Only I told that kid the apartment was being watched. If he's up to something, he'll try to get her out of there. If he isn't, it'll stick.
Huh. And what do we do while waiting for Rome to burn?
Just sit here for a few minutes and make with small talk. If you get bored, I'll amuse you.
How?
You gotta get bored first.
Oh, hum.
You will. Come on, come here.
Why, Brad, don't tell me you're going to hold my hand.
I will if you take off that glove.
Why take it off? This room for two.
With a pour like this?
I like that pour.
Why? For Pete's sake, Kathy, what do you see in me?
You.
Baby, that's the nicest thing I ever heard in my life. I'm going to kiss you for that.
Oh, Brad, no, not here.
I can't wait till we get someplace else.
Oh, but it's...
Look out, baby, quick, get on.
Good heavens, what happened?
Somebody threw a stone at us.
A stone?
Yeah, with a note attached to us. Probably came from a passing car.
What's on the note?
Let me look. Dear Mr. Runyon, if you drop the case you're working on, there's $500 in it for you. If you don't, there's a slab waiting for you at the morgue.
Oh, Brad.
Don't get excited, chick. I've had notes like this before.
What are you going to do?
What do you think? Take the $500.
You're crazy, Runyon. Absolutely nuts.
Now listen, Mac. I want to drop the case. The whole thing. I've got a yellow streak down my back.
Who are you kidding?
Nobody. I don't want to get bumped off any more than you do. I'm fat, but I'm not covered with armor.
Come on, come on. What's the setup?
You heard it. I'm scared. I want to drop the case. About 24 hours.
Well, that's more like it.
I've got to drop it so I can find out who wants me to and why. Now, if you keep quiet about those fingerprints for a while, I'll split the reward with you when we make the arrest.
Reward? For what?
I don't know yet. Take your pick. Larceny, fraud, embezzlement, or murder. Kathy, what are you doing here? I asked you to wait for me in the car around the corner.
Brad, listen, he's gone. He's left the apartment.
Who?
Dorothy's friend, Carl.
How do you know?
I just saw him in the street.
What?
He passed by right in front of the car, so I got out and followed him.
Kathy, for Pete's sake, will you...
It's all right. He didn't see me.
Was he alone?
Yeah.
Where'd he go?
Come on, I'll show you.
Hurry up. There's something awfully screwy about all this.
You said that once before.
This time I mean it. I'm beginning to think that note we got wasn't on the level.
What do you mean?
Nobody's trying to buy me off this case. That $500 offer is just a stall.
For what?
Time. While I'm running down that note, the guy who wrote it is covering up his tracks. His or hers.
No, no, no. This way, Brad. He went through this alley and down those basement stairs.
Okay. Hold it up a second.
What's the matter?
Just want to unbutton my overcoat.
Oh, Brad, what are you doing?
Putting the gun on the outside. You stay here, baby. I'm going down those stairs.
But, Brad, you can't...
Do as I tell you. If I'm not out in 2 minutes, don't come after me. Get Mackenzie.
All right, Brad.
Don't look at me, kid. Get your watch out.
I've got it.
Oh! Oh!
Brad! Brad!
Oh, that was a mean one.
What happened, Brad? Who hit you?
I don't know. Somebody let me have it over the skull and beat it in the dark.
Here, let me see your head.
It's all right. The hat took some of the sting out of it.
Oh, can you get up?
I don't know if I want to.
Oh, Brad, you're ripped.
Somebody's coming. Stop right there, mister. I'm deadly with a .45.
What?
Brad, it's Carl.
Kathy, Mr. Runyon. Hey, what are you doing here?
Catching up with you, Carl. I think you owe me an apology for slugging me over the head.
Hey, what are you talking about?
Come on, come on. You had your chance when I came through this door. If you didn't want to kill me, what did you want to do?
Well, you must be mistaken, Mr. Runyon.
I've been looking all over this basement for Dorothy's father.
Huh? What are you giving me?
Well, I know it sounds crazy, but well, I was told I'd find him here.
Who told you that?
A woman on the telephone. She called up the apartment and told me to hurry over here.
A woman? Just a plain, ordinary woman?
No, no, she mentioned a name.
What is it?
Mrs. Hubbard, I think.
What?
Mrs. Robert Hubbard.
Judas! She and Gordon must know Dorothy's in that apartment.
How did they find out?
I don't know. One of them must have trailed me there.
Then that phone call was a trick to get me here.
You said it. Quick, we've got to get to a telephone.
Hello?
Hello, Dorothy. This is the Fat Man.
Oh, hello, Mr. Runyon.
Are you all right, kid?
Why, yes.
Nobody tried to break into the apartment or get you out of it?
No.
You'd better bolt the door, kid, and keep away from the windows.
Why? What's wrong?
Never mind. Just stay where you are till we get there. Don't even answer the phone.
But...
Do what I tell you, Dorothy. There's a guy named Gordon Hubbard on the loose, and he's not afraid of murder.
All right, Mr. Runyon. I'll stay here till you come.
Good. We'll be there in less than 20 minutes. Goodbye, kid.
Goodbye. Well, now what do you want me to do, Mr. Hubbard?
Put the receiver down.
Look, you can't hold me at the point of that gun forever, Mr. Hubbard. They'll be here in 20 minutes.
That's all the time I'll need. Sit down, Dorothy. I want to talk to you.
What about?
Your father.
Do you know where he is?
Yes. He's dead, Dorothy.
Oh, no.
Yes. He fell off a viaduct about 3 days ago.
Well, how do you know?
I saw his body at the morgue.
No.
Dorothy, you've got to listen to me. You've got to be brave about this because it means so much to Mrs. Hubbard.
What are you talking about?
She doesn't know about your father. She thinks the body we claimed at the morgue really was her husband. Your father and he resembled each other enough to fool her.
But who would want to fool her?
I would. I did, in fact.
Why?
Because I wanted to keep something from her. The fact that her husband was burned to death in a fire about a week ago.
What?
His charred body was found in the apartment of another woman. And I didn't want Mrs. Hubbard to know.
So you claim my father's body in his place?
I didn't know he was your father, Dorothy. I didn't know who he was until I followed Mr. Runyon to this apartment and listened outside the door.
Oh, I see. You just went to the morgue and claimed an unidentified man.
Well, I'd been looking for someone who might pass for Mr. Hubbard. When your father was brought in, I fooled Mrs. Hubbard into thinking it was her husband.
You mean she still doesn't know?
No, but she will if you continue this investigation. She'll know the whole story about Robert and this other woman. Won't you keep my secret? Mr. Runyon can't be bought off.
It's all right, Mr. Hubbard. I'll make him drop the case.
Not on your life, sweetie. I'm not dropping this case until I find out if that story he told you is true.
But I believe him, Mr. Runyon.
So do I. The part about your father, anyway. But the other part stinks to high heaven.
Why?
Because I got slugged on the head.
What do you mean, Brad?
Figure it out. You didn't do it, did you? Carl says he didn't. And Mr. Hubbard couldn't have because he was right here in this apartment when it happened.
Then who did hit you?
Mrs. Hubbard. And if she's in on this deal, her brother-in-law's story doesn't stand up.
Wait right here, Kathy. I'm going in through the window.
Must you, Brad? What do you expect to find?
A pot of gold, baby. I'll settle for a photograph album.
How do you know Mrs. Hubbard has one?
I don't quite know. I'm going to open the window.
Oh, Brad, you'll get killed if anybody's awake in there. Can't I go with you?
No, just hold the light. I'll have a hard enough time getting in myself. There.
I don't know why you can't let the police do this.
I see what I came for.
The album?
Yeah. Right over here in the magazine rack.
Sorry, Brad.
Just a second. Here, flash the light on this, honey.
What are you looking for?
A picture of Gordon Hubbard. If there is any such thing.
Well, don't you think there is?
Not if my hunch... Duck, baby, duck. Somebody's coming.
You shouldn't have done that.
Why not? Somebody was at that window. I saw him.
Suppose it was the fat man.
So what's the better? Turn on the lights.
Gordon, it is the fat man.
You killed him.
Stay where you are, Alice.
He's faking.
Not faking, Mr. Hubbard. Just giving my assistant a little more time to get to the police.
What assistant? What are you talking about?
You'll find out.
So will you. Get up.
What's the matter? Can't you kill me lying down?
I'm not going to kill you. I'm just going to have you arrested for breaking into this house.
I plead guilty. What's your plea, Mr. Hubbard?
I don't believe I'm on trial.
You will be when I find out how much insurance your brother carried.
Oh, Gordon.
Shut up.
What's the matter, Mr. Hubbard? You're not the beneficiary, are you?
No, I'm not.
Then Mrs. Hubbard is.
Naturally. What's wrong with that?
Nothing. If her husband is really dead...
Runyon, please. If you know what I told Dorothy, please don't repeat it. Not in front of Mrs. Hubbard, please.
The story I know, Mrs. Hubbard knows, too. You're her husband, Gordon.
No.
You must be. It's the only way you both can be honest. You're trying to collect insurance on a man who never died.
You're crazy.
Am I? You needed money, Mr. Hubbard, badly. So you went to a plastic surgeon and had your face made over. The scars still show underneath your sideburns.
Oh, Gordon.
Thanks for the confirmation, Mrs. Hubbard, but I don't really need it. If he's the man he says he is, there ought to be a picture of him in this album I'm sitting on.
Get up.
Give me a lift.
Get up or I'll kill you.
Okay, Mr. Hubbard.
Oh, you pulled the rug.
Drop that gun or I'll shoot it out of your hand.
Robert.
What did you call him, Mrs. Hubbard?
Oh.
You called him by his right name, Robert.
You can't prove it.
Maybe I can't, Mr. Hubbard. But your fingerprints will. Well, Mac, what's the story?
He's a man, all right. His fingerprints are the same as Robert Hubbard's.
And that washes it up as far as I'm concerned. Police ought to be able to carry on from here.
What about Dorothy's father?
What do you mean?
Well, did they kill him or just claim his body at the morgue?
Hey, you got something there.
She has at that. My little assistant is learning fast.
Oh, am I your little assistant?
You ran for the cops, didn't you? For all you knew, you were saving me from a death worse than fate.
Now, that's gratitude for you.
Now, wait a minute, you two. I want to know about this murder business. Now, if Hubbard... Yeah?
Telephone, Mackenzie.
Okay. Then don't go away, Runyon. I'll be right back.
Well, Brad, what do you think?
I think you're gorgeous, baby.
Oh, no, no, no. I'm talking about the case.
You're too far away. I can't hear you.
You're not listening.
Do you blame me? You've got a figure that makes a guy stop and look, but not listen.
Oh, Brad, no.
I can't hear you.
Darling, not in a police station.
Anywhere.
Oh, Brad.
Oh, stop coughing and come in, Mac. You know how I feel about Kathy.
Well, I know you're not interested, but Hubbard didn't murder that girl's father. He just claimed the body of an unidentified man.
How do you know?
The kid just called me. Her father's still alive.
What?
Yeah. He'd been walking around in a daze for a while, and when it cleared up, he remembered who he was and went home.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Well, that's this business for you, Kathy. If he hadn't been lost, Mr. Hubbard would never have been found. It seems I spend my life in getting into trouble and getting out of it. But at the same time, I generally manage to get some other people in and out of trouble, too. Be seeing you again. So long.
Erie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
Sometimes you'll agree with your mother about getting your name embroidered into the band of your underwear. You never know.
Yeah.
You might get lost. Pulled that trigger early on me, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
You did.
Yes, I did. I did.
You triggered.
That's because
you
got a whole lot of radio.
Whole lot of radio.
Whole lot.
Next time, I'll talk faster.
No, it's my fault. My timing was off. I'll take the hit for that one. We're going to wrap it up with The Shadow tonight. This is a great title. I like this. Ghost Without a Face. without a face. Billy Idol. And we probably ought to run right in.
Far Out Space Nuts. Go ahead.
Oh, no. The Far Out Space Nuts are, yeah. No. I never watched them, so I didn't steal from them.
Yeah, right.
There you go. I promise. I swear.
So you say.
On a stack of TV guides.
Yep.
Ghost Without a Face from the Shadow, originally broadcast.
March 10th, 1946.
So they say. It's coming. It's coming.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? The Shadow knows.
Once again, the Mutual Network brings you the thrilling adventures of the Shadow, the hard and relentless fight of one man against the forces of evil. These dramatizations are designed to demonstrate forcibly to old and young alike that crime does not pay. The shooting war is over, but your Red Cross is still in there fighting, planning new invasions, invasions against suffering, hunger, and loneliness. And speaking of loneliness, let's not forget the Low Point boys still overseas. There are more than 1,500,000 of them spread out all over the world, including godforsaken islands in the Pacific. Many of us already have forgotten, but your Red Cross never forgets. It's still there with our rear guard, helping to make life a little brighter, helping to ease the burden. Yes, the job of the Army of Occupation, according to both Generals Eisenhower and MacArthur, would be 10 times tougher if it were not for the Red Cross activities overseas. Now, The Shadow.
The Shadow, who aids the forces of law and order, is in reality Lamont Cranston, wealthy young man about town. Years ago in the Orient, Cranston learned a strange and mysterious secret, the hypnotic power to cloud men's minds so they cannot see him. Cranston's friend and companion, the lovely Margot Lane, is the only person who knows to whom the voice of the invisible shadow belongs. Today's drama, The Ghost Without a Face.
Third act, Mr. Johnson. Curtain going up. Third act, Mr. Johnson. Is anything wrong?
Door's not locked. Maybe he's not in his dressing room. Oh, I'd better have a look.
Mr. Johnson. Oh, well, there you are, sir. At your dressing table. You're still in your dressing robe. Third act curtain is up, sir.
Raise it high, Billy. That pack of stupid ingrates will never gaze upon the handsome face of Gaylord Johnson again.
What's the matter, Mr. Johnson? You sound sick.
Yes. Sick and dying. You see only my back. Now, Billy, look upon my face.
Mr. Johnson, your face, it's bleeding.
Ripped and slashed with my own razor blade.
There's blood on your arms. Your wrists are cut.
I cut them. Yes, I died.
No.
But they killed me. They spurned me off.
Let me go.
But they can't escape the horror that will return to them after death.
Let me go. Let me go.
You'll see me again. I'll return from the dead to haunt this theater for eternity.
Help somebody. Mr. Johnson killed himself. Mr. Johnson's dead. He killed himself. Help.
Yes, Mr. Ames, I have heard stories about your theater, that it's haunted, that some fantastic ghost without a face
Rooms are out at night in that house.
The police searched the place thoroughly. There's nothing more they can do, and that's why I've come to you, Mr. Cranston. As an amateur criminologist, can't you help me track this thing down? You say you've actually heard this ghost, that you've seen it? Others have too, Mr. Cranston. Actors I've hired and tried to rehearse there. I can't keep a cast together.
Let's try this, Mr. Ames, if you want to open your theater again. Rehearse in some other place until the night your new play opens. On opening night, have the entire theater searched thoroughly to be sure no one can be hiding.
But this thing is a ghost. You can't find it.
Mr. Ames, you and I both know there aren't any such thing as ghosts.
I've seen and heard it. Gaylord Johnson's ghost with its face slashed and bloody. It's horrible. So horrible that it almost drove Billy, our young stage manager, out of his mind.
His mind is still affected?
His memory is gone completely. I tried to talk to him, Mr. Cranston. He doesn't remember a thing.
Ames, it seems to me the best thing to do to help you is to deliberately invite your ghost to appear.
For you?
Yes. Whatever it is apparently trying to keep your theater closed by frightening people away. It's certain to do something if you open your house.
Well, I don't think it's wise, Mr. Cranston, but I'll do it if you insist.
Good. And I'll be there with you to see if I can see and hear this ghost of Gaylord Johnson.
The musty, dark old place is backstage, isn't it, Lamont?
Mm-hmm. Well, first act's over, darling, and so far no ghost has appeared.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think we better wait here in the wings out of the way until Mr. Ames comes off stage.
Yes. The play seems to be going very well. Ames has really splurged on this one, hasn't he?
No. Lamont, what really happened here that night a year ago?
Well, the third act had just started, as I understand, when Billy, the young stage manager, came running to Mr. Ames in a terrified, hysterical condition, telling him that Gaylord Johnson had killed himself.
And when Mr. Ames reached the dressing room, the body had disappeared?
Yes. There was blood on the floor, on the dressing table, and on the boy where Johnson had grabbed him before he died.
And no trace of the body has ever been found?
No. I still don't see how it could possibly have been taken from the theater that night. Backstage was crowded with actors. But the fact remains, it never has been found.
Oh, Mr. Cranston, Miss Lane.
Oh, hello,
good
Mr.
Evening.
Ames.
Well, how do you like the play?
Oh, it's very good, Mr. Ames. Where did you find that wonderful old actress, Madame Trombetta?
Uh-huh. She did a magnificent bit in that last scene.
She's been in this country since the war. She's a real trooper, Miss Lane. Now, here she comes now.
Huh?
Madame Trombetta.
Ah, Mr. Ames, it is all.
Beautifully, Dorothea. And here are two new friends of yours. Prove it. Miss Lane, Mr. Cranston.
How do you do, Madam Trombetta? It's a beautiful time.
Thank you. Thank you. So kind. I must change my costume now. I will see you later. Perhaps after the show.
Second act. Places. Places, please.
I suppose you noticed, Mr. Cranston, I asked the police to surround the place.
Had the place searched tonight?
Thoroughly. Before any of the actors came in. There couldn't be anyone human hiding here.
There go the lights, Lamont.
Oh, yes. Well, I think we better stay backstage here.
I wish you would, both of you. We can stand right here.
Ooh. Goodness, it's awfully dark.
Yes, this is the murder scene in the dungeon. It's quite a start.
There goes the curtain.
No!
What?
No!
What, that scream?
That wasn't on stage.
Take your hands to my throat.
Come from one of the dressing rooms,
isn't it? Madame Trombetta.
Where's the dressing room? Quickly, this way. Down this corridor here. Come on, quick.
Something horrible's happened.
This is the room. The door's locked. Help me break it in.
Oh, hurry, hurry. Right.
Once more, Mr. Ames, hard. There it goes. Dorothea. There's no one in. The room's empty.
Well, we just heard a voice calling for help from this room.
It's the ghost. Johnson's ghost. He's killed her. He's killed her and spirited her body away.
Lamont, what's happening in that theater? First the young boy and now Madame Trombetta?
I don't know yet, Margot. I'm going back there tonight and find out.
Oh, darling, you've gone there before at night and the ghost has never appeared to you.
I think he might this time, Margot. If he's killed Madame Trombetta and hidden her body in there.
Why do you?
I was just ghost chasing before, Margot. This time, I think we may find a killer.
dark, so ugly. It's almost as if it was challenging.
Yeah, it's probably hidden plenty of secrets. It's been standing there for years.
Darling, I'm suddenly very afraid. Let's wait.
Come on, darling. Stick close to me. Now, we'll go down this alley here to the stage door.
Well, all right, I guess I'd go through most anything to get even with whatever it was that harmed poor Billy. The old actress.
Yes. Well, here's the door.
It's so dark, I can't see a thing. What? Come on, the door's open.
I haven't touched it yet.
And who are you? Who's coming into this theater? Go away. Get away quickly.
Well, I'm Lamont Cranston. Who are you? What are you doing here?
Well, I'm Pops, the night man and the janitor. Hey, I've seen you two before. Well, you best keep away from here.
Mr. Ames has given us permission to come here any time, Pops.
Well, tonight maybe you come once too often.
Why do you say that?
I heard the voice tonight. In there. Louder. Angrier. Angrier than before.
You've heard the ghost too?
It tells me to follow. But I know that there is death and madness where it leads.
Well, why do you stay here then, Pops?
Well, there's not many a job open for an old fellow like me. I'm safe if I don't listen. But now don't you two be going in there.
We've got to tonight, Pops. You stay here at the door. Don't let anyone else in. We'll call you if we need you, Pops.
All right, but remember I warned you.
I can't see a thing here.
Here, take my hand. Oh, have you got the flashlight?
No, Lamont, I thought you had.
Oh, great. Really, the doctor, now.
Oh, I'm sorry. Darling, just what do you expect to find? Wandering around in here in the dark.
I want to take a look at Johnson's dressing room first. That was where Johnson died and Madame Trombetta was killed.
I wish I'd waited outside with Pops.
This old theater is certainly the perfect background for a ghost story.
Yes, I wouldn't be surprised if... Oh!
What's the matter, darling?
Lamont. With the body hanging by its neck. I just bumped into it.
Good stuff. There is something.
What is it?
You bumped into one of those big sandbags that's suspended from the raft.
Oh, no.
Come on, darling. We'll get this over with as fast as possible.
Oh.
I see the dressing that Johnson used is just down here, I think.
Yeah. That's it right there, isn't it?
Yes.
Come in, my friend.
Wait. There's a voice coming from inside the dressing.
A ghost.
It is. We're going to have a look at it.
But...
Come in, my friend, and gaze upon death.
Lamont, there's someone sitting there at the dressing table.
It does look like someone.
My face. My ripped and bloody face.
His voice.
It's Mickey Lord Johnson's voice.
The horror of my face will drive men mad.
I'm going after that thing.
Lamont, it's falling!
Stage dummy, Margot.
What?
Used in that dungeon scene. Someone threw it on this dressing table chair.
But there was a voice in this room, Lamont. I heard it.
Yes, I heard it too, Margot, but there's no one in here but us.
Go! 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 Before the horror strikes.
Well, now the voice is coming from somewhere on the stage.
Stay here, Margot. I've got to go after it.
Lamont, don't leave me. Lamont, take me with you.
Doom! Doom! Blundering fool!
Lamont, where are you?
Over here, Margot. Come here, take my hand.
No, no madness.
Margot,
you can look upon terror and death.
Look out, Margot. Margot!
Well, darling, it's so dark I can't see you. Just reach out your hand and I'll... Oh, there you are. What's going... Lamont. This isn't you, is it?
No. Lovely lady. You are holding the hand of a ghost.
A year ago today, General Courtney Hodges and his 1st Division were battling their way through the streets of Cologne. Your Red Cross girls were there, directly behind the lines, dispensing cheer and donuts to the battle-weary GIs. Today, your Red Cross is still there with the Army of Occupation. We have silenced the Wehrmacht, but your Red Cross still fights a battle against loneliness. For the men now overseas, the warmth and hospitality of the Red Cross Recreation Club is the one bright spot in their arduous task yet to be completed. At home, their comrades in the hospitals and other veterans struggling to adjust themselves to civilian life are also benefited by your Red Cross. More than 4,300 Red Cross hospital workers assisted servicemen in our veterans' hospitals during the year of 1945. And 450,000 veterans' claims were handled by local Red Cross chapters during the same period. So, give generously to your American Red Cross for its wide and diversified program of service to humanity. Now, back to the shadow.
Well, back to the shadow in a minute. For duty and humanity.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
The Stooges thing. For duty and humanity.
Never take commercials that seriously. I don't.
No. Anywho, quite a bit of tension building up here.
Yeah. Got at least one good Margot scream in there where she gets taken away and while he's becoming the shadow. So, you know, it's right on cue. Scream is right on cue.
Yes.
There you go, Margot.
I tell you. In this episode, it seemed like the Lamont Cranston and Margot, a little bit lovey-dovey in their wordage. Whole bunch of darling and dearest and all that hand-holding going on.
This was the last guy who did it longer than anyone else, Brett Morrison. His was more of an actual relationship with Margot, where the other ones were kind of hands-on, hands-off type thing.
Right. Yeah, they didn't see her for her feminine wiles so much, I guess.
Yeah.
But I'm a woman, baby.
She was just a free
roar.
Free assistant.
Yeah, exactly.
I am woman. Hear me roar.
Well, it was about time. I mean, those two had been together for a long time, and just now, it takes that long.
Yeah.
Well, hey, it was the 40s, right?
It was. It was a different time.
Different time.
I tell you, looking at the 40s and looking at now, it's like a different world.
Yep. I'll never forget those days before I was born. Let's wrap up.
I know.
Shadow.
Yes.
So we can chit-chat and self-promote as we wrap up Ghost Without a Face. Goat Without a Face.
Face Without a Ghost.
During their search for a horrible ghost in a haunted theater, Mark Cranston and Margot Lane have become separated on the huge, dark stage. Thinking the figure in the dark beside her was Lamont, Margot has taken its hand when she discovers it is the ghost of the dead actor they'd come to find.
Let me go. Let me go. Let go of my hand.
Margot,
let go.
Darling,
let...
darling, it's Lamont.
Oh, Lamont, no. No, I felt the cold, dead hand. It was the ghost. I know it was the ghost.
Whatever it was that held you, I must have frightened it away.
Oh, darling. I'm sorry. Well, I'm home, aren't I? I must have fainted.
You did, darling, and I brought you home with Pop's help.
Well, what happened to you? Your clothes were all torn.
Something dropped me through a trapdoor on that stage. It's lucky I found my way out of that cell and up through the orchestra pit.
There are ghosts there, aren't there? There is something horrible in that theater.
Yes, Margot. Something horrible, but not ghosts. I'm sure of that now. No ghost would have to resort to such earthly tactics as dropping me through a trap door to get me out of the way.
Who then, Lamont? Who could it be?
I don't know, Margot. I've suddenly thought of someone who might help me out.
Who?
The only living person who saw Gaylord Johnson before he disappeared. Billy, the young stage manager who went to his dressing room to call him that night.
But his memory's gone.
I might be able to get through to him to help him, Margot. He's going to hear the voice of the shadow when I visit him tonight.
Billy, are you you sleeping, or is it only your mind that sleeps tonight?
Voice. Is it a voice?
Can you hear me, Billy? I am your friend.
Friend?
Yes, Billy. Try to remember. It's curtain time for the third act.
Curtain time?
Time for the third act, Billy. Call the actors on stage.
Call the actors?
Call them, Billy. Places, everyone.
Places. Places, everyone.
Now call the star, Billy. Call Mr. Johnson.
No. No.
Hurry, Billy. Call Gaylord Johnson. The curtain's up.
Up? The curtain's up?
Hurry, there's not much time now. He's in his dressing room.
Yes. Mr. Johnson. In his dressing room.
The door's closed, Billy.
Mr. Johnson. Third act. Places, please.
That's it, Billy.
Curtain's going up.
Try the door, Billy. Maybe something's wrong.
The door wasn't locked.
Then open it quickly.
No. No.
Open the door, Billy, quickly. The curtain's up.
Yes. Yes, open the door.
There's Mr. Johnson at his dressing table in his robe. He's turning. He's turning now.
Yes, turning to me.
All right, Billy, what did you see?
I saw him. He got up and came toward me. I saw his awful bleeding face.
Then he dropped dead at your feet?
He fell. I thought he was dead.
But you don't know for certain.
No. No, I was scared and ran out for help. I don't know whether he was dead or not.
You do remember, Billy. The shadow has awakened your mind.
The shadow? The shadow? Who are you?
I'm your friend, Billy.
Yes, my friend. A voice in the moonlight. Shadow, you've helped me.
You helped the shadow too, Billy. Go back to sleep now. In the morning, you will remember. And the shadow will discover the secret of the ghost without a face.
I don't care what Billy told you, Lamont. Even if Taylor Johnson is alive, just the sight of this theater gives me a chill.
I'm sure we're on the right track this time, Margot. Wait, here's the stage door.
Who is there? That you, Mr. Ames?
No, Pops, it's Mr. Cranston, Miss Lane again.
No, not tonight. I can't let you go in this place tonight.
Why, Pops?
Well, I'm going. I'm leaving here. I can't stand this job anymore.
What happened, Pops?
It's that voice. It's the ghost again. It's stronger and stronger each night. Tonight, I nearly followed.
Now, Pops, buck up. You'll be able to keep your job. I think we can put the finishing touch on your ghost tonight. Now, you just watch the door. And if I need you, I'll call. Come on, Margot. Hang on to me this time.
Here you are. Are we going back to that dressing room again?
No. I'd like to look around here for a moment on stage.
Oh, what a dark, ghastly place this is. And it's so big. Look, shine the light up there, Lamont. And just look how high that ceiling is.
Mm-hmm.
And way up there, there's a little wooden balcony running all the way around. You see it?
Yeah, it's a catwalk, Margot. The stagehands hang the sets from there, I guess.
Oh.
Well, come on, darling.
Lamont, that heavy sandbag. Mm-hmm. Right up above us.
It's swinging.
It's falling.
Margo, look out.
Lamont!
Darling, you all right?
Oh, yes. I guess so.
Blessing, you were looking up.
Yes, a moment later, and we'd have... Lamont, you know that something is trying to kill us, don't you?
Yes. I think our ghost is desperate now. It looks like it's going to be a fight for the end.
Come! Tell me! Come where I beckon!
The voice again.
Where is it coming from?
It sounds like it was coming from Johnson's dressing room down that hallway.
Yes. Yes. I come when you call.
Look, it's Pops. They're across the stage.
I come. I hear the ghost voice now.
He looks almost like a bit of hypnotized.
Pops going into the dressing room, Margot. The door's closing. Come on, Margot, quickly. Door's locked again.
I'll help him, Lamont. Hurry.
Here it goes, Margot. Keep back. Pops!
He's fallen.
Pops. Pops, are you all right?
He disappeared through that door. Out the door to the stage. Get him. Get him quick.
Stay here with Pops, Margo. I've got to get our ghost this time.
Right, right. I'll help you, Pops. Just put your arms on me and let me get you on the couch. All right, back in a minute.
Why, Pops? You can stand alone.
Wait, don't come. I'll take your hands in my throat. Lamont, we've been tricked.
Pops, what are you... Pops! No, come back here!
Lamont! There he goes. There he goes, Lamont, up that fire escape to the catwalk.
Good. I got him trapped this time. The shadow will bring that ghost down to earth.
They'll never get me. They'll never find me up here.
Shadow finds all evil.
There's someone coming up the fire escape.
Put down that revolver. You cannot escape the shadow.
I can't see anyone, but I hear him coming up. Up on the catwalk with me.
Yes, Pops. Up on the catwalk. The shadow comes closer to you.
Where are you? Who are you?
Closer and closer. The shadow comes to you.
It's a ghost. Another ghost. You won't get me. I'll find you and kill you.
You'll never find the shadow.
I will. If you're up here, I'll find you.
Now take that gun.
Something's grabbed hold of me. Oh, it's a ghost.
Stop it.
Let me go.
Drop that gun. Now you're getting down off this catwalk.
I don't know what you are, but if I find you, I'll throw you over that rail.
Come back here, you fool. Come back. That rail's breaking.
If I find you, I'll kill you.
Get away from that rail. It's breaking. Look out.
Gave you the idea that Gaylord Johnson didn't really die after all.
Yes, Margot. That Johnson was still hiding in that theater.
Well, how did Johnson disappear from his dressing room that night after he told Billy he'd killed himself?
The door to the furnace room was right next to his. That's where he went down and changed into Pop's coveralls and beard. He'd actually had to cut his hands to leave traces of real blood.
Realistic school of acting, is that it?
Besides being a superb makeup artist. He disguised himself as Madame Trombetta when he heard the theater was opening again. Used a heavy accent and plenty of veils. Killed himself off again to frighten people away.
Yes, but how did he manage so that his voice as the ghost seemed to be right in the dressing room with us that first night?
Well, he was actually in the next dressing room and spoke through the ventilator, then ran out onto the stage.
For goodness sake. But why? Why did Gaylord Johnson want to keep that theater closed?
Mr. Ames told me that by the second act of Johnson's play, he knew it was a flop. He told Johnson he was going to close it that night. Ames said Johnson threatened him, seemed actually unbalanced with rage, and swore that no one else would ever star in that theater again.
That's a strange, twisted ego, playing the starring role of a ghost.
Yes, and what a fantastic performance. Playing the parts of Madame Trombetta, Old Pops, and the ghost.
Then there weren't any murders after all, were there?
No, Margot. The only life Gaylord Johnson took was his own, when he tried to kill the shadow and fell through that broken railing tonight.
Shadow returns in just a moment. Since Pearl Harbor, over 500,000 victims of 869 domestic disasters have been given food, clothing, shelter, and medical care by your Red Cross. Yes, even in spite of war, Red Cross carried on the home front, for disaster is no respecter of war. When tragedies occur, Red Cross disaster workers are on the scene immediately. They feed, clothe, and shelter the needy victims, give medical care to the injured, and stay at their side through the long period of rehabilitation. But your Red Cross is present not only in time of disaster, it is also with our men still overseas, our wounded in the hospitals, and our veterans who are struggling to try and readjust themselves to the problems of civilian life. The Red Cross is G.I. Joe's home away from home, and wherever he sees the sign of the Red Cross, he knows that America isn't really thousands of miles away. So give generously to your American Red Cross for its wide and diversified program of service to humanity.
This story is copyrighted by Street & Smith Publications, Incorporated. The characters, names, places, and plot are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. Again next week, the shadow will demonstrate that
the weed of crime bears bitter fruit. Crime does not pay. The shadow knows.
The hours are good.
Next week, same time, same station, the Mutual Network will bring you another strange and thrilling adventure in the Shadows' daring battle against the forces of evil. Be sure to listen.
What?
Hello?
What'd he say?
Hello? What?
Did he say something?
Potentially the very last of the evening, Erie House presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
Pretending to be your own ghost is fine, as long as nature is in on the gag. There you go.
Okay.
Okay. Hello. I'm Mr. Red.
Yes,
he is.
John Elway is.
No particular reason. Tomorrow night we'll be back with more facial stories. Well, one of them anyway, from CBS Radio Mystery Theater, House Without Mirrors. An intriguing title, to say the least. And then after that, at 8 o'clock.
If triple digit latency goes away, well, either or. There will be a horrible horror starring Gargoyle at 8 p.m. on the Twitches.
There you go. One way or the other, live or Memorex, it'll be Guy the Ghoul at 8, right after our show. Yep, and then next weekend, Dave, you got some good stuff for next weekend. Well, we're not exactly feeding the whole weekend. It's two different things.
Yeah. Special weekend.
We're going to take a hack at it. We're going to take a hack at it.
Yeah, we will. Yeah, I didn't look that up.
Yeah. That'll be fun. Yeah, you have to be here tomorrow to find out what it is.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Yeah.
Yep.
It'll be fun.
I wanted to point this out. Everyone is prompted to go back into the archives and listen to the entire show, but pay attention to the shadow. The shadow had one person doing the voices of two, possibly three people. The funny thing is, one of the people this person portrayed, the person was a male portraying the female actress. And when I listened to it, it's so close to the Monty Python female, it's hilarious.
Of course, I heard a strange voice in this.
It's like that the male pretending to be a woman. Oh, goodness. Yeah, that whole crazy female voice thing. Whatever. But
whatever it is, whatever you do.
Whatever it is.
Erie House Radio tomorrow night at 6:30 Eastern. Join us live. It'll be Gar. Maybe Gar will show up. Myself, Dave, and C-Dubs. See ya.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And him.
When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone. Can you dig it?
Yes, I can. That was almost perfectly timed. Not quite. At least it cut off at a good spot.
Where does the audio drop for that Can You Dig It from Vincent Price come from? Do you know?
The Thriller soundtrack.
Yes.
Okay.
Is that from the longer version, I think, where he adds the Can You Dig It? Cause
I think that was when he made more audio than was used. And I think that was some of the extra audio that was...
Which we played here one night in its entirety. There's a the Thriller rap actually has a missing stanza or verse, if you will, from what was actually the final product.
Yeah.
That you get to hear in that recording.
There was a... Oh, hang on.
And a little candor between Michael Jackson and Vincent Price. Love them working together.
Yeah, first.
Cool.
Toast is ready.
Oh, toast is ready.
Do you put butter on your toast or margarine or something? Jam?
What a man doesn't. Ow, son of a boo-boo. That was hot.
I thought my wife was going to turn into Elwood Blues. She wanted dry white toast.
Calm down. Dry white toast.
Dry white toast. Dry white toast.
And how did it go? Did she enjoy it or what?
No, I think she just
can't hear me.
Threatened to make me watch her eat it because it would make me die inside. You must slather something on the bread. Something.
Yeah.
Grease it.
But you don't... do you eat your toast dry?
Never. Only Elwood Blues does that.
Okay.
But I think...
I eat it dry and hanging upside down. That's my recipe. Let's see.
Oh.
Actually, the wife, she orders hers dry and then puts jelly on it. But she doesn't want butter on it.
Well, jelly's fine. It's something to soothe the throat as the dry white toast goes down.
Right. I think the tongue has to be stimulated to make saliva so you can eat it.
Yes.
Butter,
exactly.
Jam, mustard, anything. Just you have to put something on it.
Otherwise, it's like eating a bag of chips without chewing.
Yeah,
that. Your throat up, you know?
Oh, come on, you.
Yep.
Now, I can't count to eight. Okay, here we go. There we go. All right. Trying to set a digital timer, and I kept overshooting. Okay, so that's done. We're out of here. All right. Yes, I was a vampire on a day pass. I woke up, and I was like, it's 7. It's 7 a.m.? Okay, well, that's okay. Then I looked like something said PM, and I was like, what? Wait, the day is gone? The day is gone. So, yeah, that was weird.
Says, well, might as well shoot the rest of the day to heck, and I go to Erie House.
Exactly. Might as well.
What we had surmised, Gar, is that the Cox Cable came out to your house to fix your lines. They got tired of hearing from you, and they snipped your telephone line.
In fact, that's what we told everyone.
Yeah, we did. We told.
And there is curiously a hook to that because today at around noon, they were supposed to, quote unquote, this is what they told me. I called in early going, it's still happening. The data loss, the problems. And they said, well, okay, so what we're going to do is on the 30th, and they told me this like a week ago, on the 30th, we're going to, is today the 30th? I can't tell. Yeah, no, today's the 29th. Today's the 29th. So on the 29th, we're going to send a bucket truck out, and they're going to fix whatever it is. They're not going to come to my location, but they're going to get a bucket truck. They found it. They're going to fix it. So while we were going through, they don't have a bucket truck, they couldn't have gone out the same day and done it. But anyway, they said, here, create your hopes. Oh, there it is. Oh, buddy. So they said, create some hope and put it into this guy, and we're going to come out supposedly on Friday and fix whatever problem is. So while we were doing the broadcast for Erie House, it dawned, bing, okay, hey, you need to go check and see what's going on. I went and checked, and I was like, okay, well, it seems better. And then I started doing my ping testing and stuff, and I've got timeouts, and I've got triple-digit latency. Nothing has changed those lying so-and-sos. So what the heck?
I'm looking right now, and I just saw it time out.
We thought about scheduling it on the 29th.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So after I talk to you guys, I got to go talk to the Cox people and go, yeah, so? And they're going to go, oh, well, we did a dancer on a maypole. Did it get better? You know, and I don't know.
It'd have been better if you had put clothes on.
Yeah, well, you know, it was supposed to be midnight, a full moon, naked people. And they didn't do any of that. So what the heck?
Yeah.
Why am I not surprised? Yeah, I know. So they're, again, more, what do they call it? Lip service? Yeah, that's it.
Yes.
On the upside, I get a call in and go, I'm not paying for the month. You guys never fixed it. And they go, okay, we'll take it off. Why? I don't get this. How does a company stay in business by constantly going, oh, yeah, we won't fix it, and we'll refund all your money? How do they stay in business?
I don't know.
Well, but,
I don't know, but
most people don't complain. Most people don't complain about it. That's the thing. They'll just pay it, and they don't complain about it.
Well, like, if you folks at home if you had some type of diagnostic information about your television reception and all that, the data that was coming in, the data that was lost and all this, you might go, hey, you guys are not doing the job. But for the most part, we get used to it. Oh, well, it blinked for a second. We'll be okay. It'll come back. And the early days of digital television, they had a lot of pixelation and a lot of problems. Am I wrong? Do you remember?
I don't think it was really pixelation because it wasn't a digital feed. It was an analog feed.
True.
Yeah, when they flipped from analog to digital.
You got snow and interference and shadows, but you didn't get pixelation.
Right, no, when they made the adjustment. Right, when they flipped over to...
I've pixelated before.
Uh-huh, yeah. that included alcohol, though, didn't it?
Of course.
Well, of course. No, but when they flipped from analog to digital in the early days of that...
Oh, okay, I see.
Yeah, there was some... I remember my mom flipped over, had a TV at that time. I wasn't living there anymore, but... and I was over at her place once, and she was like, yeah. And it kept freezing, and then come back pixelated, which is almost the problem I'm having, but with internet. And it's hardwired. So it's really weird.
And this is kind of why I miss the days of the antenna TVs and the black and white. Because, you know, you bang the TV on the side, and often it would work
right.
And gave you some sense of control.
Yeah. And what if when you bang the TV, what you were actually doing was moving dust off of some type of connection or something?
Probably.
You know? It's like... Because that was it, man. You wiggle the ears, bang the TV on the side or the top, and then stand on one leg, and it came in, you know, and that was...
Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
It was a beautiful thing. It was science.
It was.
It was science, yeah.
It was science.
It was a lot of science. It was. The only problem with science is when the users become scientists themselves.
Yes.
Which is kind of like the diatribe we hear about people and their opinions on news and politics and all that other stuff. When they become the experts shudder, right?
Hey, guys, I see that, I don't know if you were fans of it back then, but I see that AMC is rebooting Max Headroom, the new series.
Really?
With Matt Frewer. He's back with Max.
Wow. But it's computer generated, so yeah, it doesn't matter really what he looks like. They can make him look like anything.
Yes, so. That's true. They have his image and the right.
Did you guys hear? I don't know. Do you guys have a grocery store up there called Aldi's?
Yes, we have Aldi's. Yeah.
Supposedly they're throwing in the towel. I read something that said that
really?
They're going to go out of business. Yeah.
Oh, no. Because, I mean, I don't go there rarely, but I'll tell you what, they're very inexpensive. compared to other stores.
Yes. I haven't heard that. I've heard that they've been trying to compete with Walmart, but I haven't heard that they're going out.
Lost. Yeah.
Well, maybe in a particular area. I don't know. I shall have to look that up.
I saw it as a blurb, and I was like, okay, I'm not an Aldi shopper, so I'm like, whatever.
But the problem with those blurbs are half the time when you open the article up and read it, it has nothing to do with what they said in there.
True,
yeah.
True. The old clicky bait.
It's exactly what it is.
Fake news. Seriously, I think a lot of things are said for people to get attentions and to get clicks. That's why they call it clickbait.
Yeah.
Everything's clickbait anymore.
That Aldi may be temporarily closing the store after three permanent shutdowns. So that's the only one that I see on that. So
then they fibbed whatever that was I read.
Well, it was clickbait. It was clickbait.
Right. I didn't.
And then
click
a lot
it.
Of people started talking about it, so it became a big internet sensation. Mm-hmm. And says here, food rumors can rise faster than the best sourdough starter. Ah! Some people believe that Aldi is closing. The fear from missing those favorite Aldi finds might be full of smoke and mirrors. Recent Reddit made a reference to a post article, but it seems that the statement might be a little more like the boy crying wolf. Although the pandemic has seen various retailers, chains, and restaurants closing the stores, it does not seem to have impacted Aldi's and its business model. As reported in the 2020 article, Aldi is on track to become the third largest grocery chain in the U.S. by store count by 2022.
Wow.
Which is this year. So, yeah, it's far from closing. That was clickbait. Oh.
More clickbait. Okay, so that's
more clickbait. Yeah.
You give it two Pinocchios.
Yeah.
Whatever that means.
Oh, boy.
Toast is ready.
So, yeah, toast is ready a lot. I'm making having fish for dinner.
I haven't made toast in a long time. Somewhere I lost the recipe.
Really?
For what?
Really?
Yeah.
I think it's turned it on the bottom side of your toaster.
Well, I tried that, and all this stuff fell out of the toaster into my, including two forks,
right.
And it fell under my pants, and I had to go change
toaster
clothes.
Toaster leavings.
I toast manufacturers to get you to clean your toaster out. That's what that is.
Oh, you got real pixelated there.
I think you're digitizing, Gar.
Okay. Yeah, I know what it is. Oh, and the fire alarm went off again. Darn it. Oh,
it sounds
God.
Like it hurts.
Right. I know.
Are we going to be reading about you in the internet tomorrow?
Yes. Gar's on fire. Literally. Yeah, no.
Literally.
Or it could be clickbait. I don't know. Oh, boy. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I actually enjoy, because I live alone, I actually enjoy the fire alarm going off because it reminds me, hey, you were cooking something, goof. You know.
I had a question for you, buddy.
Uh-huh.
How did you come up with that date since this was the 29th episode, not the second?
Oh, a lot of my indicators pointed to the fact that it was like the fourth episode.
Really? Okay.
Yes. Let me look.
Well, I do not know. This one said it was the 29th.
Okay, so from two different sources, we've got two different sources say that, okay, one, no, wait, what is this? Okay, one says it's the fifth episode. I have two different sources saying it's the fifth episode. Now, they have, like, way weird dates, as you were talking about. It's almost like they flipped the numbers.
Yeah, we talked about that earlier, yeah.
from 45 to 54. But my sources, two different sources, pushed it to number three, and then from there we got dates.
If it were the third one, I could see that's the right date. But if it were the 29th one, you're into 54.
If it's the 29th one, then we're at the July 4th, 1955.
March 24th. Yeah, is what I had. As the
March.
29th episode. Yeah.
My 29th. Oh, well, I have episodes missing, and I filled them in. Because there's a whole group of about 4 or 5 episodes that are missing. And so I was pushing the date forward on those. It missed a week. So maybe that would kick it differently. And then, that number was, different. So anyway, there's a whole bunch of math, I guess.
He said, chicken's never
ready.
Said there'd be math.
And then I ran into the wonderful world of programming your electronic spreadsheet, and there's a whole lot of math.
A whole lot of math.
Whole lot of math.
Well, as the goat would say. Yep.
Well, my goat said. Same goat. Different area code.
Yep. Well, I do feel I am on the verge of a sugar event. I am going to hit the button.
All right,
here.
Well, in that case, let's bring in the one. Yep, let's bring in Schnozola and hit it for the night.
And folks,
all right. Good night, folks.
We'll see you at 6:30 Eastern every Friday and Saturday.
Good night. Good night. Good night. It's time to say good night. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we say, and ink-a-tink-a-doo.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
I ain't starting over.